This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
With Lee Chui Lin, and it is 7:10, and we're going to be moving on to, you know, looking at the impact on policies with the extension of the movement control order. So as we all know, it is now going to be until April 14th, and as a part of that, we also saw the government earlier today releasing an economic stimulus package to help people who've been impacted by the order, and also to give incentives to frontliners from all the way from medical officers to the police force. But if we're just to take a closer look at the MCO itself, right now we're seeing a 95% compliance rate, at least that's the number as of day 8 of the order. And yesterday, Defence Minister Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob said that stricter regulations might be introduced during the second phase of the MCO, which is kicking off, you know, pretty much next week. And that might touch on purchase of essentials, food, shopping, just basically our movement. But we don't know really, there's yet to be an announcement. What we can say, though, is in Johor, Kampung Dato' Ibrahim Majid and Bandar Baru Dato' Ibrahim Majid in Simpang Renggam, Kluang, are now under an enhanced movement control order. So if we look at what it entails there, this means that local residents and visitors are not allowed to leave or enter the areas for the duration of this enhanced movement control order. And this is after the Health Ministry confirmed that Kluang itself reported 88 new cases, and 74 of that came from those two areas. So looking at this, I think, from a larger perspective, there are bigger implications to be considered. What is the impact of a longer term and possibly stricter version of the movement control order? We've, I think, been slowly adjusting to it over the last, 10 days now. We've been slowly adjusting to it, and people have come to terms with it in many ways. But we also know that there is this tremendous impact. We've been speaking to people all across the station who have had their businesses interrupted, who are petrified, really, that they're going to be out of a job, out of a business, out of money. And so while the movement control order is undisputably an important thing for public health, there are all these ramifications to things that we do need to consider. So on the line with us right now is Dr. Kaw Swee King, who is a physician and public health and public policy specialist, to kind of take us through this. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Kaw.
Thank you, Lynn.
So firstly, how are you holding up in light of everything that's going on?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. Just came back from Oxford just about 3 days ago, self-quarantining in an apartment somewhere near Putrajaya. But my thoughts are always with the other people of Malaysia who are perhaps living in accommodation that is less comfortable than what you and I may be used to. So they will find it very difficult to comply with the movement control order for various reasons as well. So I think my thoughts always go out to the 32 million Malaysians who may be, shall we say, less privileged than you and I and anybody listening in.
And with the extended MCO then, what impact do you see this having, particularly on those groups of people, I think, that you just described?
The impact of MCO, I think, will be increasingly more pronounced in several areas. Let's talk about health firstly, and then we'll start talking about non-health areas. In the health areas, the essential goods and services that supply the health system, as well as the workers that supply the downstream, really, industries and goods and services that that support the health system might be affected. So for as one specific example, we're talking about the cleaning services, and they need chemicals, for example. And to what extent is a chemicals industry considered a service as essential to the operations of Malaysia? So we might not see that the hospitals are directly impacted, but we can see that the cleaners are definitely needed. They need to find a way to get to work, and public transportation services needs to be there. And as one more example would be what to do with the chemicals industry that is also needed to supply the cleaning equipment that's needed for hospitals. And that's just the impact on the health system that's a little bit invisible, but over time might be more visible. And when I say over time, perhaps as early as next week. In the non-health sector, clearly the emphasis today has been on the economic stimulus package that has been delivered by the Prime Minister. It has an impact on perhaps two or three levels. The first one is to talk about income and livelihood. A lot of it is, shall we say, helicopter money or helicopter drops. It's a term, an economics term, that was designed by Milton Friedman, a key economist, that says during a time of grave national crisis, you can deliver money, so to speak, directly, for example, through a helicopter drop to the citizens so that they can sustain themselves. I think this is good, but that could carry one unintended consequence that it would not adequately supporting businesses and instead we're shifting the money directly to the consumers or the citizens. Then when this crisis is over, we don't want the possibility that they have no jobs to come back to, because the small and medium enterprises in Malaysia, for example, comprise 40% of the Malaysian economy, employing approximately 15 or 10 million Malaysians. So we want these Malaysians to not only be able to weather the storm, but business to be resilient enough as well. So all in all, the extended MCO might affect the health system, but also the non-health system.
And of course, the main thing I think here that's keeping us all going in the midst of this MCO is the desire to flatten the curve, right? That's been the message that's consistently put out. When will we be able to see that one way or the next? I mean, we are obviously seeing this spike in cases now as a result of, you know, earlier infections because of the period of incubation that we know of. So when will we be able to see the effects of the MCO?
Lynn, that's a beautiful question, but probably an impossible one to answer. This is a question that everybody has on their minds. And the answer is even scientists don't have a good idea. Firstly, when the peak will be and how long the entire outbreak would last. And certainly, it's also difficult to predict when we will be able to visibly see the results of the MCO. But here's why. Aside from trying to have a crystal ball to predict the future, Lynn, there are too many variables in play right now. Firstly. Secondly, we're testing, Malaysia is testing our population a lot more. So the more you test, the more you will find disease. So just because we have more cases, it doesn't mean necessarily that it's a bad thing. It could be a good thing. Why? Because it's reflecting that our health system is now able to test, to manufacture those test kits, to deploy those test kits, and then we get more infection. So although the numbers might rise in the short term, and when I say short, I mean the next 7 to 10 days, it will, shall we say, more likely to be visibly worsening before it gets better. But the worsening numbers or the increasing numbers of infections, it is bad because I wish that nobody had this disease. But it could also be good because it means our testing capacity is better and our, say, public health system and the contact tracing is also better. So that's an alternative way of looking at one statistic, which could also be positive and negative at the same time.
So, okay, completely understand that we cannot predict the future, much less under these sort of very, very trying times. But do we know of examples of other countries that have implemented partial or complete lockdowns that have been similar to ours or even been longer? And do we know the results from that?
Yeah, yes, we do. We can point to a few Asian countries like China, South Korea and Taiwan and even Singapore. So let's use this for example. Why do we use them? Because they were the earliest hit and they instituted quite quick and aggressive measures for three things. Number one, social distancing combined with mass testing combined with excellent contact tracing. One alone is not enough. So you can't have tracing alone or testing alone. You must have all three of distancing, testing, and tracing at the same time. So these four countries went through the process earlier than any other country, and they instituted three measures simultaneously, aggressively, and effectively. And we can see that it took a period, and these are very different countries with different populations and different densities and so on, but it took about 2 weeks to 6 weeks before you could see an effect. And that's a range.
And as we talked about earlier, in Johor, we are actually seeing two districts now under an enhanced MCO. And this is ahead of the Defence Minister saying that potentially there will be new SOPs for a stricter second phase as we head into this the next 2 weeks. What are your thoughts on this move?
I think this is... As the evidence continues to emerge, Lynn, we should perhaps change our positions as the evidence continues to emerge. But it makes sense. It's reasonable. We could imagine a situation where Malaysia could have, let me call it a basic MCO, where basic restrictions are observed across the country. But for hotspots, from an epidemiological or rather a public health perspective, it might make sense to have an enhanced MCO. Let me introduce a third term, right? So from basic MCO as a baseline to an enhanced MCO, let me call it a super enhanced MCO for want of a better term. And this could be highly targeted to highly small populations or geographical areas because the risk of infection in that particular cluster or neighborhood could be higher than the rest of Malaysia. Therefore, this allows it to be a little bit more targeted and not to, shall we say, inconvenience all of Malaysia or harm the economy or the people all around Malaysia, because we must operate a little bit with a little bit of a sharper instrument rather than a blunt instrument that we can apply all around Malaysia. So all in all, Lynn, I'm generally supportive of the principle that we should target our interventions in a way that mirrors and is proportional to the risk in that particular geography.
And, you know, I think a lot of what we're doing now, and not just us, but countries around the world, is really looking at each other to see what's worked, what will work. And China has emerged, of course, after a total lockdown. Now, Wuhan is going to have a partial lockdown, I think they said, sometime soon. So we are, however, seeing in China more concerns of potential carriers who show no symptoms. What can be done to address those concerns here, since we know that they are beginning to exist elsewhere, increasingly so?
Well, what China did, I think, is a great illustration of the two questions that we just discussed, Lynn. The first one is that China did three things very well all at once and quite effectively: social distancing, contact tracing, and mass testing. This was something that China did very early. And indeed, they also targeted different parts of the country with different levels of, a lockdown, let me use that word. Wuhan, for example, the city itself was effectively blockaded. Other parts of the country were on a partial lockdown. And yet other parts of the country, because China is so large, has got, shall we say, a more basic form of a lockdown. And I think that allows them to refine their approach to escalate, to go up or to de-escalate whenever necessary. The presence of a secondary wave and tertiary wave, or second, third, fourth wave of infection, is always a possibility for any country in the world. But coming back to what you've asked, I think what we can do in terms of potential carriers is to refine the signs behind this. And this is refined in two ways, Lynn. The first way that we refine the signs is the signs of testing. We have at least two or three different tests right now approved by different levels of federal agencies around the world. The first test looks at the first 3 to 5 days of infection. The second test looks at antibodies that come after 3 to 5 days of infection. That's a small period of overlap. So let me say this, the short-term or quick test and the long-term or later test. And long-term would be in the second half of the disease. And when you deploy two types of testing, you will be able to see in the acute phase or in the urgent or emergency or the early phase who has the disease and therefore isolate them quite quickly. But if you deploy the second test, you can see those who have already had the disease probably have recovered, because 80% of people who have COVID have no or mild symptoms. So if we can get them, we'll be able to perhaps, theoretically speaking at least, relax the MCO for Malaysia, because we can already identify who already have recovered from the disease and therefore they don't have to be on that lockdown anymore. So to your point about the different levels of disease and the different tests, we can use those tests as we ramp up the testing capacity for the early stage or the late stage of disease to maybe even rationalize or to do the movement control order in a way that's a little bit more targeted.
And I don't quite know how to ask this next question, but I think it's the one that people are thinking about as well. When will this end? And I don't mean the movement control order, but when will it be a point where we can feel some sort of peace of mind concerning COVID-19? When will it not be the thing that it is right now, this pandemic, this worrying pandemic, right? You know, is it going to take a vaccine? Is it going to take a cure? What is it?
Well, Lynn, it's an extraordinarily difficult question to answer. I will provide an answer after perhaps a few caveats, right? The first one is so many people who've made a prediction have been proven wrong. And secondly, the predictions that are available right now give us a rough range of when it will end. We're not talking about the peak. We're talking about when do people generally feel less worried about this. And the range is as early as June, July to as late as June, July next year. And this is predicated on several assumptions because the data will be imperfect. The assumptions are based on people's risk appetite. So some one person might say, I'm more optimistic, or another person less optimistic, and therefore you get the differences in range. It's possible to imagine that the peak for Malaysia will come around April to May, and with a long tail off stretching out into June, July, even August. Now, this is a mid of the range, a middle of the ballpark sort of estimate, because some people are thinking earlier, some people are thinking later. So if I give the average of the estimates that I'm receiving right now, a peak around April, May, June, and carrying forward to around June, July, August. Hopefully, it's earlier because our government is generally speaking providing economic stimulus packages once every week over the last 3 weeks, which is great because assisting the livelihoods and incomes of people, and secondly, managing the mental health and feelings of people is as important as the public health and science response. Because outbreaks are not only medical or public health, they're actually political, they're economic, they're psychological, they're cultural phenomena as well. So if you manage all the other aspects, hopefully the peak will be around May, June, July with a little bit of a stretch till for the rest of the outbreak, hopefully until August, September. Yes, so that's a bit of a middle of the ballpark estimate.
Dr. Kaur, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much, Lynn.
That was Dr. Kaur Swee King, who is a physician and public health and public policy specialist, talking to us about the impact that an extended MCO, as well as a stricter one, might entail. And also just, I think, giving us some latest thoughts surrounding the pandemic. You're listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.